You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 595, recorded for April 10th, 2019, Digital Law and Gospel. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today, we are joined by Jason Schmidt, who shares with us his thoughts on digital law, rights, and responsibilities as we continue our review of the book Faithfully Connected. Interesting discussion about how Christians can both observe the law, but also share their faith in a digital way. Great picks Jason brings to the table. Bark for Schools, those of you that need to be aware of what's going on your network and what your kids are doing. So it would be a great tool to consider. We have some Pinterest boards for copyright, fair use, plagiarism, and a great discussion on some questions raised in our high schools about copyright and fair use. All that and more coming up. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech, episode 595. We're recording this on April, to look at the date, because everything's amiss today. April 10th, this is a Wednesday, although it says Thursday in our notes, but I know it's Wednesday, 2019. And one thing is normal. I'm with Sally Draper because...
Because
that's what we're doing now, right?
Yeah, been doing it for 11 and a half years, Martin. So yeah,
that's another reason.
I'm here, but I'm in the same room with you again as last week, and I will continue to be on site here at the Center for Mission and Ministry. Excited.
That's neat.
For that,
we're going to get her own name tag and her own cube tag and everything, so people know who she is.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. So we're super happy to have her. In fact, so speaking of super to have. Happy to have people. Jason Schmidt is joining us, one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents. Welcome back, Jason.
Oh, thanks, Martin. You flatter me.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's a beautiful, sunny, windy day here in Nebraska, and you know, we're getting ready to buckle down and avoid the blizzard.
Very
good.
Sounds
like an April thing to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right.
And longtime listeners will know that when we have Jason on the show, we talk about education technology. And we've been looking at, on our education technology focus shows, a book called Faithfully Connected. Very interesting conversations. We're kind of right in the heart of the book at this point. We're going to be talking about digital law and digital rights and responsibilities. And I heard secondhand, Jason, that you were very excited about this topic.
Yeah, I really am.
It takes a special kind of person to get excited about that. But as I read the chapters, I think it's great information to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I spend in my current role, I spend a lot of time talking to kids and teachers and staff members and, you know, community members and all of that about just, hey, how important it is for us to pay attention to the kinds of things that we're doing online and how we're conducting ourselves. And, you know, that whole concept of not just being a decent person just in regular life, but being a decent person everywhere you represent yourself. And, you know, the topics that we talk about in these two chapters really kind of drive home that point about, you know, how we need to be responsible, not just in our face-to-face and our real interactions, but also those online interactions that are still just as equally as real.
So have you seen the repercussions of not following digital law, digital rights, and responsibilities in your particular setting? What's gone wrong if these things aren't done right?
Nothing in particular in my district, but there are people in our state that I know who have gotten into trouble. Copyright seems to be something that really impacts people. A couple of acquaintances that I have lost their jobs over copyright violations, and after getting caught with some of those things and violating intellectual property rules and those kinds of things. And then also our school district has an attorney who's a wonderful, engaging speaker, and she does the stupid teacher tricks. And, you know, she'll pull up a teacher's Twitter account and say, here's something that a teacher posted, and she ended up losing her job because, you know, you can't say some of the things that some of these teachers say and post on social media because your superintendent finds it. So, you know, really an important topic for us to talk about, you know, with the laws and everything that is kind of in place to protect the companies that provide those services, but then also how do those laws apply to us?
Interesting that you responded with teacher examples. I was thinking about students in this book being geared toward, you know, teaching students, but obviously we've got to start while they're young to teach them these types of responsibilities and things.
Well, and the, you know, if you look at the kinds of interactions that kids have with online content and social media and that kind of stuff, you know, they learn by watching, and mm-hmm. they see the interactions that the adults around them have. And, you know, it's really important for us to be good models for them, to, you know, to make sure that we're setting a good example.
Yeah, that was a point that was actually raised pretty early in this chapter, too. Follow copyright law. As a teacher, it's tempting to copy something off for the students to use, even if there is no permission given. Say, check your own copyright usage and find out what you can and cannot copy for personal and classroom use. And that's a pretty complicated topic. So it's important for teachers, educators to get smart on this stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and what I find happens very frequently, just in the kind of interactions that I have, is a lot of people have a really poor, I don't know if this is necessarily on topic for what we're talking about, but so feel free to rein me back in. but a lot of people that I interact with have a very poor understanding of the doctrine of fair use and how that applies to how they can use content in the classroom. You know, the thing I hear frequently is that, well, you know, it's okay for me to use this because I'm using it as part of it's part of face-to-face education. And well, no, that's not necessarily accurate. It doesn't necessarily apply that way. So, you know, some of the ways that we interpret some of these laws, we need to be educated ourselves. And again, so that we can show students that these are the appropriate ways to use content.
I thought it was interesting, just diving into the first chapter here on digital law, because the author's coming at it from a Christian perspective, he kind of dives into the three uses of the law, curb, mirror, and guide, and equates those to different aspects of following digital law. I thought that was kind of an interesting take. He said when God gave Moses the Ten Commandments, he did it for several reasons. The Israelites were his chosen people. They were set apart. They were to act differently because they were set apart. As Christians navigating the current digital culture, we are also set apart to be different, act different, and follow Christ's examples. And he goes on to talk about mirror, curb, and guide, really kind of phrasing that as a real positive. It's not just, I don't want to break the law because I might get caught, which is a part of the law, but there's also this Christian modeling and this reason to set yourself apart because we are Christ and are setting good examples, and that applies to all areas of our life.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, definitely. I can see students easily falling to temptation, especially like in the areas you've talked about of copyright, of stealing things, you know, the download of digital content is so easy to get around or whatever. And also realizing or helping them to realize that whatever they do online, becomes part of who they are. So it's not easy to shake mm-hmm. those things once you break those laws, whatever they may be.
Yeah, it's right. not just a one and done thing. This is, you know, your permanent record in some respects, certainly as you get up into to middle school and beyond. Mm-hmm. One thing that I thought was kind of interesting that I kind of made a note of here is that when they're talking about the important learnings in the digital law components, one of them they said is encourage the creation of original material. And boy, I think that's a powerful message if you can get that into your kids, that you really don't need to plagiarize or you know, kind of worry about copyright if your goal is to create original content, to use the gifts God has given you to kind of be a self-publisher. Come up with stuff that came out of your own head or your group's head, and then take advantage of things like Creative Commons to copyright your own stuff. That to me that seems like an exhilarating process. Where, hey, I'm a publisher. I am making original content, and then you're kind of not having to worry about the negative side. You're really kind of focused on the positive stuff.
And you're feeling like I don't want anyone to steal my content.
Right.
So
you get
I'm
a better appreciation.
Go.
Right.
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 So good stuff. Towards the end of the chapter, he gets into three stages of learning this. This process of teaching, and they're outlined as physical learning stage, where actions have consequences. You create a blog and other people can read it, and you are physically doing things. And then it shifts to a virtual learning stage where you're thinking about the virtual consequences. Your online activity is recorded and things like that. So you're understanding more of the curbs that are in place. And then finally, envisioning learning stage, where you consider how tech usage might impact your future. And that could be both positive and negative. So that one's kind of the mirror learning stage. So there's definitely a progression you could walk students through in their school career.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think we need to, when we're talking about that envisioning learning stage for sure, we want to, when we're talking to kids about the kinds of things that they post online and what their online reputation looks like and all of that kind of stuff, understanding that just because something doesn't physically exist, that does not mean that it's not going to be available forever, and that's kind of how all of these online services work. We talk about the concept of a digital footprint, or we hear that a lot. But I like to talk about it as a digital tattoo. it's one of those things that is once it's out there, you can't take it back. The internet is gonna remember whatever it is that you put out there. Even if things have changed 20 years from now, what are your children going to find on you from this phase in your life? Is that really something that you're going to want to be able to see? So, I think the book does a really good job of explaining how that's a really important thing for us to make sure we're instructing kids on, and when it comes to their online reputation.
Yeah, that digital footprint or digital tattoo, as you call it, I think that's a great distinction, because it's a lot harder to remove a tattoo, and you actually really never get get it totally gone. At least that's my understanding. As I was reading that section, what occurred to me was that even if they publish something, it can still be taken out of context and maybe used against them. And we're going to talk more about that in the next chapter as well. So it almost suggests that you really need to over deliver on the the Christian side, as a Christian thinks about what their reputation is online, that they really need to be consistent throughout their life, living their faith out and making sure that their posts are positive and the content that represents them is as a body something that is representative of who they are as a Christian citizen, not just living close to the line, but kind of going as far to the right as you can, in that Christian living concept. So it's important to get that across to our kids, that it's not just don't, you know, on the negative side, don't leave something out there that could be used against you, but leave stuff out there that's going to tell the world who you are.
Good segue into the next chapter, Martin, I think, which is titled Rights and Responsibilities. We're taking two chapters this month instead of our normal one. And the fact that we all have the right to freedom of speech, at least as it exists in our country today, but we have the responsibility to use that wisely. And I think to let our Christian light shine is a good example of using it wisely.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Sally. And, you know, one of the things that that I often see is, you know, we'll have kids that, you know, say, well, you know, I can say whatever I want. I've got freedom of speech. And we're like, well, yeah, technically you do. But, you know, the other half of that is you're exercising your freedom of speech can't impinge on somebody else's freedom to say what they feel, too. And if, you know, if what you're doing is getting in the way of their right, then that's a completely different, you know, you're not being a responsible citizen, and you're not being a responsible person by getting in the way of somebody else exercising that same freedom. So you know, that's something that a lot of people and adults have problems with this too, right? Where, you know, I can say whatever I want, but, you know, if you're intimidating, or if you're getting in other people's way of exercising their rights, then that's not accurate or correct either.
Reminds me a lot of Christian freedom and the way it's described in the Bible, that we don't want to do things that cause our fellow Christians to fall into sin or whatever, that lead others astray, and
yep.
Certainly can be applied here.
There's a section kind of taking off on that a little bit. I'll just read the sentence here. For example, when we post something to our social media accounts or a comment section on a web page, we anticipate that others should not vandalize our thoughts and opinions or threaten or harass us because of them. And I think increasingly, and maybe you guys have seen this too, that it is difficult for a Christian to share their faith or their beliefs or what the Bible says without this happening, without backlash, or without being called intolerant or phobic or out of touch. And I think that has had and will continue to have a negative effect on our ability to have free speech and to share our faith in whatever capacity we like, which is really part of our calling. And I think we really have to encourage our kids that, you know, yeah, the easy path might be just to not say anything, just shut up, be silent, whatever. But that's really not what I think we're being asked to do. We're asked to let our lights shine, to be salty. And our kids need to recognize that the path is not always easy, and that we do have opportunity to clearly declare God's word as it relates to moral situations in any other situation.
Good point, Martin. It's like we anticipate the opposite of what the book
says.
We do anticipate backlash.
Exactly.
and all of that. And it's a really fine line. And I think, you know, you can find your comfort space and share what you want to share, but still share it in a Christian way and still, you know, make that the center of who you are and who you portray yourself as. It's
right.
Challenging.
Right. One thing that I really enjoy about this book is they have this try this section. And the one for this chapter was kind of neat, where they call it digital expectations and God's law. And they put this chart together. They list all the Ten Commandments, and they say, use this chart to help you and your students identify the digital expectation associated with each commandment. Students could work in pairs, small groups, as a class to brainstorm and develop guidelines for digital media use that are faithful to the Ten Commandments. So they give a couple examples. You shall have no other gods, first commandment. Put God before your technology use. Shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Do not use vulgar language online. That's a great exercise to kind of bring the Ten Commandments into the you know, in the kids' reality. Minds, probably into the present day, right? Mm-hmm. That this is not just, these are not just letters carved on stone. These are things that have application in our digital lives.
Yeah. They also have at the end of each chapter, each of the two we've talked about today and all throughout the book, lesson plans that emphasize the points being made in the chapters, as well as catechism lesson plans, so where you can bring these discussions into your catechism lesson as well.
Anything else in this chapter strike you, Jason?
Continuing on with that same area that you were, you know, we were talking about the commandments and the expectation that lines up with it. I really like the next gen where it's talking about usage policies.
Oh yeah, that was excellent.
And going from an acceptable use policy to a responsible use policy, kind of placing the emphasis more on like what you do want rather than what you don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the same kind of getting at a gospel motivation rather than the law, and you know, do this because this, and rather, you know, focusing on the outcomes that we want. So I thought that section was also very well done and would be worthwhile for our for people to emulate.
Yeah, I highlighted that as well because I had never thought of it that way, but that really makes a lot of sense from a Christian perspective. And just simply renaming it is a good start from acceptable use policies, and we have examples of those, and I've talked to congregations and schools about developing those to this responsible use. So, as you mentioned, focusing on rules and regulations is kind of the thrust of an acceptable use policy, but mm-hmm. focusing on desired behaviors and positive outcomes is kind of the focus of that responsible use approach. I really like that.
Yep. Yeah.
All in the wording. So, so far so good with this book. I've been really excited about the concepts presented here and how Christian teachers can take them and apply them in their regular classrooms as well as their catechism lessons. So, we will continue this book discussion next month, or actually it's at the end of this month, with Professor Rachel Feld from Martin Luther College hitting the next chapter. And I don't have that in front of me, but I know Rachel's excited about the title of the next chapter. Let's see if I can find it quick.
Digital health and wellness.
There you go. Health and wellness. Good stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, I would agree with you, Sally. I think this was a good find, and this is, as some of our listeners might remember, this is something that Professor Feld uses as mm-hmm. textbook with her class there at Martin Luther College, teaching our next generation of teachers. So, good stuff. All right, let's move along to the next segment of our show, and that happens to be Wells Now, where we talk about news going on within our Wells circles. Sally, what do we got?
Well, first up, we want to make mention that Wells Daily Devotion and Through My Bible in 3 Years podcast resources are now available on Spotify. So we just keep spreading that good news further and further in all these different channels. And Spotify is one that's used by many to find audio content. And now they can find daily devotions and Bible readings.
Yeah, Spotify recently is getting big into podcasts, kind of generating a lot of interest or maybe renewed interest in podcasts. And Spotify has a huge install base. So if you search for Wells Now, you should be able to come up with our daily devotion or Through the Bible in 3 Year podcast. So good. It's great news.
Yeah. And just this morning, I received an email from our friends at Martin Luther College promoting a new devotional book that's available for your use next week, which is a very special week in the life of Christians. It's Holy Week next week. So beginning with Sunday and Palm Sunday, they developed devotions for each day. And this is something MLC's been doing around Easter and Christmas each year for several years. So they have the resources available to read online or download as a PDF. They also have print copies. It's getting kind of close to the date to get one of those mailed to you, but you could reach out and they would mail you a copy potentially. But what's exciting to me is that they have a new podcast this year where the authors of the devotions have actually recorded themselves reading their devotional materials. So again, starting with Palm Sunday all the way through Easter, you can hear various MLC professors reading the devotions they've written, it ends on Easter Sunday with President Mark Zarling reading his devotion on Mount Zion, the Lamb. So they're all focused around the Lamb in this devotion series.
Nice use of technology, guys. Way to go. All right. So that is our Wells Now segment. We'll have links to all that stuff in the show notes as well. It's time to move on to our picks of the week, and we'd love for Jason to kind of kick things off. What do you got for us, Jason?
Sure. So part of the chapter that we discussed and something that information that was included in the chapter that we were discussing that we didn't really talk about was the idea that sometimes kids, not sometimes, very frequently kids have secret accounts, so, you know, call them a Finsta account or a Sinsta account, a fake Instagram or a secret Instagram, or, you know, the book calls them spam accounts, and they hide those things from their parents. So sometimes parents want to be able to monitor what kids are doing, and there's a subscription service called Bark that parents could pay for. It costs about $9 a month. And that lets them monitor kids' text messages and things like that for some of those kind of risky kinds of behaviors. But Bark also has a free tool that's available for schools that does the same kind of monitoring for any email accounts, their browsing history, and then it'll also go through their Google Drive and flag alerts that when it sees content in there that might be a little bit questionable or potentially harmful. So this is a tool that we've installed in our district, and I'm monitoring about 2,800 accounts, about 2,900 accounts, and I get about maybe 25 notices a day, and I probably don't have to do anything with 24 of them, but it's still nice to know kind of where some of our students are visiting and what kind of content are they looking up and generating themselves, and then we can monitor those accounts and, you know, talk to those kids and intervene if necessary. So it's looking for things like bullying or bad behavior or sharing information that they shouldn't be and all of those kinds of things. So just another level of comfort for kind of keeping an eye on what's going on with what our students are doing when they don't think that we're looking. So that's Bark for Schools, and you go to bark.us/schools to sign up. Like I said, it's totally free. It's a good price point for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's really just been a great tool for us. So happy to endorse that one.
Looks like it connects with Power School, which would be of interest to a lot of our schools. Mm-hmm. And there's how does this interact, or what's the parent component here, Jason?
So that's where the Power School integration comes in. Uh-huh. So if you have parent contact information loaded in there, you can set up the integration with Power School, and then it'll automatically load the parents in there as well. And then what happens is it will, based on what the school selects, during certain hours, it'll go first to the admin or to the school personnel, and then it'll go to parents. And then you can set different hours so that it goes to parents first. So in urgent situations, like it's looking for things like self-harm and suicide and those kinds of things, there will be that'll get flagged by a person who works for BARC. And they will actually call either the school or the parent, depending on how those contacts are set up, and notify them that, hey, here's this alarming activity. You really should go and check on your kid.
Nice. I love the name.
Right? Yes, it's very clever.
Right. Awesome. Thank you, Jason. Great fun. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Sally, what do you got this week?
My turn, and I'm going to talk about my favorite company, TechSmith, once again on Wells Tech. It's a common discussion, but I think they do video and image snagging correctly and are well. And today I'm going to point to a blog post that was recently published titled 11 Types of Videos You Can Make Right Now. And the reason it caught my eye, as I'm sure they hoped it would, is how they led off the article. It says, video is now one of the most popular ways to communicate, and video consumption and video creation are both on the rise. People love video. In fact, 6 out of 10 people prefer online video platforms to live TV. So, quick poll. Do you watch live TV anymore?
Only when The Voice is on.
The Voice. Voice rules. Huh? How about you, Jason?
I have probably not watched live TV in more than 6 months.
So there you
go. Everything I watch is streamed.
Yeah. And for us personally, we subscribed to Philo recently, PHILO.
Oh, yeah.
Very affordable. And I've got Food Network and Hallmark channels and even some HGTV. So I'm all set. And I can kind of dial it up when I want it. So I fall in that category as well. It also says there are over 1 billion, that's 90s there, mobile video views per day. So that's a lot of video consumption happening out there. And 400 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every minute. So definitely video is very popular. We probably all know that. What they've put together here is an infographic and some supporting information about 11 types of video you can create to give you ideas for creating video. And, you know, just to go along with our EdTech discussion, I think these are great ideas potentially for use in the classroom where you're having your students do that content creation themselves. Some of these, obviously, not all of them necessarily would fit, but certainly for schools and churches to consider as well. Churches on the social media side, maybe you want to have more content that's engaging on your Facebook page or whatever it may be. Short videos are very popular for that. So some of the things they list here, internal systems training, technical support, webinars and live events, information delivery, building buzz. I thought that might be a fun activity around maybe Lutheran Schools Week in a school or the school play and having some students assigned to the promotional side of those kind of activities and doing some fun video creation with that. They also list onboarding, education and how to, reporting bugs and errors, capturing knowledge, meet the staff, and social media. So again, the article goes into more depth in each of those areas, but certainly reason to pause and consider your video communication usage and goals, and maybe get some ideas from this article from TechSmith. TechSmith is behind Camtasia Studio, a very popular video creation software, and they do have nonprofit pricing. So check that out if you're interested in trying out the tool.
One thing I like about TechSmith, not only do they have great products, which I use all the time, Camtasia in particular, but Snagit and a few others, is they do a lot of educational type videos. They teach you how to do a screencast. They teach you how to set up and plan a video. We've, I think, shared some of those resources in the past, and this is just another example of that. So the tools are one thing, but you got to train the tool user, right?
To
understand it exactly. Mm-hmm. So good stuff. Thanks, guys. All right. My pick of the week is actually a new browser that's out in beta. I think we've talked about this being in the news in the past, but Microsoft Edge, which is, I don't know if we can call it Windows' new browser anymore. When Windows 10 came out, maybe even before, it was kind of the replacement for Internet Explorer. Had its pluses and minuses. I always thought it was pretty fast, and one of the challenges that it had was it wasn't overly compatible with some websites. We found some challenges in using it in some of our Synod resources. Some of the plugins were a little bit lacking, but they have changed direction a little bit, and they're kind of plugging in the engine that powers Chrome, called Chromium, into Microsoft Edge. And this beta release, available through the Microsoft Edge Insider.com website, is available for testing. They have three channels. They have a beta channel, which it gets updated. The software gets updated about every 6 weeks. They have a dev channel, which is the one I'm using, that the software gets updated about every week. And then they have what they call a canary channel, which that's kind of on the very bleeding edge, and I found that to be a little unstable. That gets updated every day. But so far, so good. Some of the features that I really like are the speed. I think it's faster than the old Edge, and I think it's definitely faster than Chrome. It does support all of the old plugins from Edge, which they had a lot. There were LastPass and those kinds of things, ad blockers, etc. But it also supports all the Chrome extensions, which is kind of cool. So you have the best of both worlds. They're syncing across browsers and Microsoft accounts, and I think they've done a really nice job. So if you're interested in kind of kicking the tires on this new browser, and I do believe it is faster, and want to help out the community by giving feedback, you can join the beta program by going to MicrosoftEdgeInsider.com and downloading one of the channels or getting on board with one of the channels. You can have multiples if you want, but it's free, of course, and you can kind of get a preview of what might be coming to Windows 10. I think those of you that support multiple computers in your environments and they're Windows-based, you may want to take a look at this to get a little bit of a heads-up on how it might be working with some of the tools you've created or some of the tools you use. So that's another reason to check it out. But two thumbs up from me so far. I've not found, at least with the dev channel, anything that I've been challenged with. So give it a try. That's the Microsoft Edge Insider program.
And am I safe to assume this is your browser of choice now? You've replaced
I still have Chrome, Okay. Clearly, but it's the same engine, so it's going to give you the same rendering experience, supposedly. So that part I'm checking out, too, because if this is coming to our users' computers, across the Senate and here in the building, too, I want to make sure that it's something that we can stand behind, so... Yep, so I'm using it day to day. I'll give you a status report, progress report as the weeks go by here. During our education technology focused sessions, and especially as we're looking at this book, or going through the book that we just kind of have been reviewing, going chapter by chapter through, we replace our ministry resource with a Pinterest resource, and we highlight a few boards. Sally, what do we have up this week for our Pinterest boards?
Yeah, we found a couple of boards related to copyright and plagiarism. So resources that people have compiled around those topics and things that you potentially could use in your classroom or ideas that could help you get started working with those topics, citing resources, understanding, what's good and bad in terms of your behavior with resources, and then understanding the repercussions of plagiarism and the kinds of levels of plagiarism that are out there. There are resources. There's a really cool infographic on the plagiarism board called How to Paraphrase a Paragraph, where it walks people through understanding how to use a resource but not copy directly from it, things like that. So I think these are two good boards worth following.
Awesome. We'll have links, of course, in the show notes. It's that time in the show where we talk about community feedback. We give everybody who listens to the show, I suppose anybody who doesn't listen to the show can give us feedback too, but that can come through email, social media, voicemail, going to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and leaving a comment. We're trying to gather that all up each week and share some interesting thoughts, and we have some great feedback this week.
We do. Actually, right off the bat, we had a question from Pastor Ray Schumacher, who is starting a new role in his ministry as a visitation pastor. So it's a large congregation he's going to be serving. I want to say it's Trinity in Waukesha, where he's going to be serving, and they have a lot of shut-ins. So coordinating who's visiting whom each month when it's shared responsibility between multiple pastors and volunteers, keeping up with all of that data and managing it and making sure it's very easy for people to know where they're supposed to be visiting and things like that is a, a challenge he's wrestling with right now, and he asked us about advice. He specifically asked, he said, I'm envisioning using Google Sheets, but he's also heard us talk about Trello a good bit on the show, and he wondered if Trello might be a resource we would recommend for this type of data management, basically. I wrote back to Pastor Schumacher and suggested Trello maybe isn't the best tool for what he's trying to accomplish. I'm sure there could be a way to make it work. It's very versatile, and you could use labels and different things to indicate things, but I saw it more as a database kind of exercise, and typically congregations have church management software in place. The ones I'm most familiar with come from Concordia Technology Solutions. They have Shepherd Staff, and they have their online Church 360 members software that I think both could handle this type of work where you could assign and track who's visiting whom, that kind of thing. I'm not super up on making it happen, but I bet if you dived into the software, that would be a potential solution. Certainly a shared Google spreadsheet could do the job, and that's a good resource to consider. But I'd love it if our audience would reply with any solutions they're using for visitation tracking.
Put on my privacy security hat. Just whatever solution you use, just make sure that it's locked down, you know, appropriately, that if you are sharing this information, it's with authorized people as well. So, but I would second
good
that.
Point.
I think Church 360, especially maybe over and against Shepherd Staff, because Shepherd Staff is hard to share because you kind of got to be on the same network, and, you know, maybe even at the same computer. Church 360 is designed because it's web based to be shareable. So it's cool. Good. I had an occasion to dip into one of the Google groups that I'm a member of. Wells High School tech directors have a group, and I kind of listen in on their conversations once in a while and grab some interesting ones. And one of them happened to be recently a question on copyright back at the end of March here. Justin Lippert, who is a frequent listener, asks, recall back to previous meetings as the high school directors get together once in a while. We have had and remember people stating that chapel services are not considered a classroom setting when it comes to showing copyrighted content. Can anyone point me to a place for backup on that? We are currently showing Passion of the Christ in our chapel services, and I'm wondering if that is legal. I've mentioned it before, but I've received pushback that it's school, so it's okay. On a related note, does anyone currently have the licensing to play copyrighted music at public events like basketball games? So these are relevant not just to high school, but to our elementary schools too. Josh Shanick responded, nice response from Josh. He said you may want to look at, and then he gave a link from prattlibrary.org on some copyright information. Goes on to say, copyright law forbids the public performance of a copyrighted movie without permission of the copyright owner. There are two exceptions to the law that you could argue in this case, even cites the section and the paragraph, exemption for face-to-face instruction, and exemption for use in religious services. Fair use exceptions, which, Jason, you brought up earlier in the show.
Yep, those don't apply.
Copyright section 107, in case anybody's interested, does not apply here, because it addresses making copies, not performance. So that might be an example where I think maybe, Jason, you were saying people kind of overuse that, and here would be an example. My feeling would be that simply showing the film by itself as an event would not be okay without securing performance rights. And we should disclaimer, Josh is not a copyright expert, but he's obviously put some time into doing the research. If the showing of the film will be accompanied by discussion, you could argue it is face-to-face instruction. If it is integrated into worship service, it may fit under the religious service exception, I should say. Then he gives a link to public performance rights to Passion of the Christ. And regarding music at basketball games, you want to start with references an ASCAP article. He says, I've been told that our administration has contacted ASCAP on several occasions and has been told to not bother getting licensed. It has been several years since that was done. If you contact them and get a different answer, I'd like to hear about it. So great feedback from Josh, who is the Director of Technology at Kettle, Moraine Lutheran High School. And Justin, who raised the question initially, holds that same position at Winnebago Lutheran in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. So great stuff, guys.
Yep.
Thanks for letting me share that. There's a again, these questions, you know, the devil is in the details. You know, we kind of have high-level understanding of what it is and isn't, but there's so many applications that you really have to kind of dig a little bit deeper on almost every one of these questions.
Yeah, and Martin, if I could just interject a little bit.
Yeah.
Everything that Josh said, as far as the performance of the movie and everything, that's spot on. That's exactly the correct interpretation. So he gave good advice on that part of it. When it comes to like playing music and things like that at like basketball games and things like that, you do need a license for that. But ASCAP is not the place to get that from. They should go to get like a Pandora Premium or a Pandora for Business or a Spotify for Business.
Oh yeah, right.
Subscription. I mean, and they're kind of costly. It's something like $30 a month. But that gives you those performance rights. So I would encourage anybody who's looking to use music in a public setting like that to get like a Spotify Business or a Pandora Business account. Covers those license fees for them.
Yeah, great advice. Thanks for sharing that.
So I'm going to go off script now because we have not one or two, but three great examples of Wells EdTech Lead speakers who you can tap into if you attend our conference this summer. Jason, Josh, and Justin, all the J's, they're going to be there and they're going to be speaking on IT administration type topics at the conference. So we want to see you there as well. Come on, techies, represent. And you can learn more at wellsedtechlead.com. So please consider that. Our early bird pricing is ending soon. May 1st is the last day to get the $50 discount on the registration fees. So normally $375, you can register now for $325.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Nice segue. One more piece of community feedback.
One more piece of community feedback, and this is a news report that I picked up on recently from the Miami Community News papers, and it's titled Divine Savior Named First Smart Exemplary School in the State. Referencing Divine Savior Lutheran Academy in Doral, Florida, they were recently named Smart Technologies Exemplary School, the first one in the state of Florida for integrating, 26 smart boards throughout their second to fifth grade, all the classrooms in second to fifth grade, plus math and science rooms in middle school and high school. So they are using smart well. Some of the quotes and things included in the article, it says, teachers work together in lesson planning and creation. The lessons can be shared throughout smart learning online suite and delivered by one teacher on different panels throughout the day or by several teachers on various panels at the same time. A few of the several engaging and enhancing lessons that are currently taking place are science earthquake simulations, virtual field trips to modern day and ancient historical sites, analyzing global weather patterns, embedding notes on PowerPoint presentations, and graphing complex mathematical equations. The learning environment has become a place of limitless learning possibilities, and the teachers work hard at maximizing the potential of the classroom. So, excellent recognition for Divine Savior, and keep up the good work, guys.
Yep. Those of you who don't know, Divine Savior is one of our Lutheran elementary schools.
Yes.
They're one of our bigger ones. So
all the way through high.
Yep,
high,
that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Very good. Congrats, guys. Video of the week.
Oh, that's me.
That's you.
Except it's Jason's video.
I could read what's in the OneNote here, but it's probably better that somebody else talk about it.
Well, I'm just going to say that Jason recommended our video of the week, and it's about Bark for Schools. It's actually a demo video. It's about 3 minutes long, so a quick watch to get an idea of all the great things Jason described in his pick of the week, which is Bark.
Very nice. Coming up next week, we're going to come back again and finish up our series on intranets. We've looked at a few. No, are we finishing up? No, we have probably
you
one
wish.
After that. Maybe we could, but we're taking a look at intranets from a couple different dimensions. We're looking at it from a technology perspective, where we're looking at Google products. That's Sally's deal. And I am looking at it from a use of Trello, and we're also viewing it from church versus school. And we're on schools at this point. So next week, you can look forward to Sally talking about how you can use Google technologies, sites, docs, whatever, to set up an intranet for your school.
And the reason I said you wish is because we can anticipate Martin's May segment to wrap up this discussion using Trello for school intranet.
So. All right. So hopefully that's been helpful, everybody. Jason, thanks a lot for joining us once again. Really enjoy your insights.
Happy to be a part of it. Thanks for inviting me and continuing to invite me back.
Very good. Yep. Our pleasure. Thank you, Sally, for everything that you do. And thanks to all of our listeners for their attention. And bring a friend next week. We will join you during Holy Week. So have a blessed Palm Sunday and Holy Week, and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.